This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Welcome, Arizona Cardinals fans, to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Can you believe it? The Cardinals, they got a win in Green Bay. They defeated the Green Bay Packers 20-17 and got their coach fired, Mike McCarthy, before we even finished writing our post-game material, announced that they let McCarthy go. The Cardinals are now 3-9. This is episode 213 of the show. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, USA Today, NFL Wire site. My co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And Seth, just when you think that the Cardinals are that bad, they do this.
Well, and allegedly or supposedly the rest of the NFL agrees because, man, they sure did fire their head coach after he lost to the Arizona Cardinals. A little bit of a joke, I think, but yeah. So they played so much better this week. I wrote about it that you saw the vision of what Steve Wilks wants to be, and it's not a pretty vision, let's be completely honest. But it's a vision that won it their third football game this season, that gave their team a good opportunity to win a game that, you know, kind of leaned on what? Defense and running the football and special teams. And when your defense outplays the other team's defense and then your special teams outplays the other team's special teams, even, I guess, if Aaron Rodgers, maybe the greatest quarterback of his generation, is on the field, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. And so we're going to talk about that in tonight's show. So we're going to look at the win and kind of ask each other, what does it mean? Because, you know, after the Chargers loss last week, after the loss of the Chargers, it felt like there was no way that they were going to do any better than 2-14 and maybe win one game. Maybe this is that one game, but we're going to talk about what that means. We're going to hit the game up again, and we're going to each to give our top two good things and the two biggest concerns. The rookies played a lot. We're going to react to what we saw from the rookies on the team, and then we're going to wrap things up talking about the injury issues that have come up because three more guys are on injured reserve, and we're going to talk about expectations for the rest of the season. We're not going to really talk about – I mean, we're at the point of the season where it doesn't make any sense to really sort of break down each opponent. So we'll suffice it to say that the Detroit Lions, they're a hot mess this week. They've lost 4 out of 5 and have lost 4 or 5 games on the road as well. So there's not much worth breaking down, especially with we don't really know what the heck to expect from the Cardinals. So let's go ahead and get started with this. So Seth, tell me, what does this win mean for the Cardinals and Steve Wilks and really everyone else involved?
I think it's one of those situations where it strengthens a coach's resolve in what he wants to do. He sees what he wanted to see finally. And you know, you and I talked a little bit about it off the air. This is what Steve Wilks and the guys he coached under like. I mean, this is what, Lovie Smith in Chicago and Ron Rivera in Carolina. That's what these guys coach. This is defense, ugly football, running the football. And maybe it was the cold weather and that played into this more. And, you know, because it was snowing for about a little over a half of the game. The field was a mess, slush-like, because of the heaters underneath Lambeau Field. And so it basically defrosts the grass, which then causes the, you know, frozen grass to turn into just like a wet, like a wet grassy field. And so, you know, maybe this was the game plan going in, like, hey, we've got to protect our quarterback, but we've also have to protect the football. We have to do a good job with these different things. And you saw kind of what the goal for Wilkes has been this season, and it worked out well this week. And, you know, it came away with the win. And I think that's the biggest thing is you saw, I think the Cardinals had or finished with 182 yards rushing. And they had less passing. So yeah. That's kind of, I mean, we joke about it, but that's kind of what Wilkes wants to be. And that's, and I mean, again, it's not pretty, but I think it's what he wants.
Exactly. Now, what I took away from that first and foremost, what does the win do? Well, if anything else, it lowers that noise level down because fans, media, that's all anyone was talking about. They're talking about Steve Wilkes' job. They're talking about Steve Keim's job, talking about that the team quit. And you know what a win does? Even if it's against a team that's playing poorly, even if it's without playing particularly well overall, even if the season is still basically a disaster, a win just makes that noise go away. So all the outside talk so that you can focus again on football. You can focus on the next opponent. You can focus on the development of the young players, but you get a win in there, and especially the type that they had, and it just calms things down a little bit. I heard it on the radio. It gives Coach Wilkes a reprieve. So instead of asking him, and I saw this in person in 2012 during the season when they lost 11 of their last 12 games, and the question started coming up week after week about whether Ken Wisenhunt was worried about this being and coaches, to be honest, they can't really worry about that, but it gets very uncomfortable for them for the most part to start answering questions about it, and you can see the stress on their faces. And with every loss, there's more weight and more stress on the team. And when you get a win, it feels really good. And so more than anything else, it breaks up that weight of disappointment because you got to win. And that's one of the things that for me, it means that Cardinals football for a moment has hope.
Well, it's hope. And it's this idea of players buying in. And I think that was the biggest thing that we walked away from. Aaron Jones was averaging like an absurd 6 yards per carry. And the Cardinals defense did a nice job on him. I mean, to be completely fair, it's not like the Packers ran the football, which may have, you know, again, been why you saw Mike McCarthy fired, but it allowed the Cardinals to play solid run defense for the first time this year. I mean, wouldn't you say that this was the best effort from their run defense all season?
Well, statistically, that was definitely the case. Only twice all year have they allowed fewer than 100 yards rushing. And the first time they did it was in week two against the Rams when they got shut out, when it was ugly. So,
And that was the thing. The other thing was, I think you saw players buying in a little more. I think we saw that Steve Wilkes has not lost the locker room yet. I think you and I both would agree with that. They played extremely hard. And I think when you look at the overall season, that was probably the most that was the effort that you've been kind of waiting to see, right? Like to come to life. And the blowouts were weird because the Broncos game was just, I think it started kind of fluky.
Yeah. Those pick sixes, and that was just, it went sideways fast and the Cardinals didn't know how to react and it went bad. Then right. The other one is that they against the Chargers, things were going fast. Really well, and then things went sideways, and they didn't, and it got too sideways too quick, and they couldn't undo it.
Right, and so, but it was kind of, I mean, we talked about this, or I wrote about this when I talk about Steve Wilkes' vision and what he wants. I think one of the things that people misunderstand is that this whole idea of like, oh, we want to run the ball and stop the run. And people are like, well, what, you know, that's so archaic. And it is, but the reason you do that is because this idea of like being one dimensional, right? And like, if another team can't run the football because they're playing from behind, then you effectively make them one dimensional, and then you have a better opportunity to get stops, especially against, you know, passing games, because then all of a sudden you don't have to worry about the run and you put in guys that are just going to rush the passer, and you design defensive concepts to play, you know, play games in the secondary, which is what Wilkes likes to do. And then, you know, obviously if you're running the ball 90% of the time, you're typically winning. And so when you look at it from that perspective, the Cardinals, I mean, quite frankly, haven't done that much this year. And so they haven't had a chance to run the ball a lot. They haven't had a chance to establish the run and milk the clock. And to be frank, they didn't even do that this week. I mean, they still were outgained, and they still had, I think, a 10 minute time of possession differential, which is crazy. But you know, they were able to win the rushing battle, and I think that's what they wanted to do when this game started.
And they did it without David Johnson being particularly great. He was
workmanlike.
Okay. It was a workmanlike performance, the 20 carry, 69 yards, and then they got the flash from other, I mean, Josh Rosen and his 33 yard scamper. That was
beautiful.
It was beautiful and scary, and almost the end of that reminded me of Carson Palmer and his one rushing touchdown that took like 5 years to develop, and then he couldn't even spike the football. But yeah, what does it mean for me? It means that what we talked about, that the no quit, they didn't give up, they still came out to play, that more wins could happen. Whether that's something you as a fan wants at this point of the year or not, it means that instead of going, oh my gosh, this 2-9 team is gonna be 2-14, this now 3-9 team probably is gonna win 4 and could win 5 games. It no longer, with a performance like that, it turns things back into they're just a run-of-the-mill bad team instead of just a god-awful, terrible team. Like their losses earlier in the year, when they lost to the Bears and when they lost to the Seahawks, those were those are the type of games that a bad team loses. But they are close enough to tell you, okay, this team's got a chance, this team can turn it around. It's when you mix in the 34-0, the 45-10. They've had 3 losses by more than 30 points this year. And those are the games when you get boat raced like that, and you just get blown out of the water, that you say, oh, this team is awful. It's not just a bad team that doesn't know how to win. It's a bad team that doesn't know how to play football. And I think the win that way at least changes perspective a little bit to, okay, this is a little bit back on track. Let's see what we do the rest of the way. Again, what we've talked about for weeks is we want to see progress. We want to see competitiveness. And that's what we saw. And this time they came through.
Yeah, they did. And it was nice to see them, you know, find a way. Josh Rosen had a key play in the game, and it's one of the biggest complaints I think we have of the Wilkes system, is that it's effectively neutered their you know, rookie quarterback of being a guy that takes chances. And you know, we talked about this a little bit last week. When you watch Josh Rosen play at UCLA, he's a gunslinger. I mean, he's not Pat Mahomes in the way he does things, but he's definitely a gunslinger, a guy that likes to take chances, a guy that likes to throw the ball around the field. And that's like the complete opposite of Steve Wilkes. And so it's been tough to watch at times. So now to see him, you know, or to see him be able to make that play that he made, that really kind of change the outlook of the game, that was a huge deal.
It was. And so let's move on. Coming back on the next part of the Rise Up Seabird podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We'll talk about the game specifically. What were the top two good things we saw for each of us, and were the two biggest concerns? That's coming up next on the Rise Up Seabird podcast. We're back on the Rise Up Seabird podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's go back to this game. The top two positives, and then your two biggest concern. What would be your number one top thing that you took away that was a positive?
I think the first positive you have to kind of look at is the offensive line. And for me, we've talked about this quite a bit, but the offensive line has really struggled this year. And so to see them come out and play well, 182 yards rushing, over 4 yards per carry. Corey Cunningham had three penalties, but that was really it on the game. Two of them were false starts, so I mean that's going to happen. They only gave up the one sack, I believe, or did they give up two?
There were two.
There was two, but they really only the offensive line was only responsible for one, and that was when Phil Gossett couldn't handle a guy kind of one-on-one. The other one was on, I would say it was a combo of Rosen and DJ, David Johnson, in the, it was a delayed safety blitz.
Yeah.
And Johnson left, and it has to be Otto. If Johnson leaves, then Rosen has to throw it to him. Has to throw it to him right away. Exactly. Like, you can't wait to see if something's coming open down the field. So like I said, it was a combo, like, but so the offensive line, I mean, they literally had nothing higher than a fifth round draft pick, and that was a guy that had already been cut they had Mason Cole, so he's a third round rookie. But like, they had no veterans that were higher than a fifth round draft pick that had already been cut in both Ode Ibushi and Will Holden. You had a six-round rookie that was cut in Phil Gossett, and then you had a seventh-round rookie in Corey Cunningham. So it was literally an offensive line of nobodies, and it was maybe one of the better performances we've seen this year.
And for me, I'd say take the number one positive for me was taken. I'm probably going to throw two things in. It's two sides of the defensive performance. And that is, one, their play against the run, and two, their play on third down. The Cardinals have been preaching a lot of things this year, and the adjustments just have not come. Whether it's buy-in or execution or personnel or talent, they got it right when it came to the running game. Not only did they only give up 98 yards, which was by far much fewer yards than they'd been averaging, but Aaron Jones, he'd averaged 6 yards a carry entering the game, leading the NFL. He averaged 3.3. And if you want to look at it, kind of the other things that they've been that have plagued them in the running game is giving up big plays. And in the running game, what they gave up in the running game is they only gave up one play of more than 20 yards. And that was on I don't remember if it was a jet sweep. It was when you had a receiver run of the ball on around the end. And then another hit, Aaron Jones's top run was for 13 yards. So they didn't give up the big plays. They didn't give up the huge plays, which has kind of been their bugaboo. They'd be fairly consistent and then give up a huge one. So they gave up a 21-yarder to Valdes-Scantling. Jones had a 13-yarder. Aaron Rodgers had an 11-yard scramble. And I have a hard time putting those scrambles on busted pass plays. I have a hard time putting those in the rushing yards, but you have to. But overall, that plus third down, they've been so bad on third down on many of these games, and 3 of 14 now. In fairness, Green Bay has struggled the last 3 weeks on third down. In fact, it's their second week in a row that they were in the 20% conversion rate. So it was against a team who had been struggling on third down, but nonetheless, they were effective. And so that was my number one takeaway. My number one positive is that those defensive points of emphasis that have been struggles were the biggest positives of the game defensively.
Yeah, and I thought that the play of Patrick Peterson continues to be special. Obviously, the play of Chandler Jones continues to be special. And I think, I mean, we've talked about this quite a bit. That's what's frustrating is you have two guys that are, I would say top three, but I mean, if you want to be very safe and say top five at their position, I still think that's accurate. So you have a top five edge rusher and a top five cornerback in the NFL. And your defense is struggling that bad. I think that's – it's just a – I mean, there is a lack of talent, but I think there's been a lack of buying in from other guys. I don't want to sound like I'm saying that about Peterson and Jones. So to see the other guys start to step up and start to, you know, buy in and lock in, and that's – I think that was a huge deal.
What was your other big takeaway of the positives?
I thought the other big takeaway was that you saw the ability and the potential, the potential thunder and lightning on that run in that Arizona Cardinals running game. And it was, you know, like you said, it was David Johnson doing a lot of the grinding, wearing a team down. I still think that's a terrible way to use him, but it is what it is. And then you saw the big plays from Chase Edmonds, and that he's a, you and I were trying to figure out the best way to describe him. And I think for me, it's slippery. That's what he is. Like, he's a slippery runner. He doesn't, you know, like, people don't make clean contact on him. And that was the biggest thing this week that you saw, was that this guy is just able to make plays in different ways. And so he had a nice game for them. Obviously it was kind of his breakout career game with the two touchdowns. But he's a very talented player.
Well, and didn't it feel like he was on the field a whole bunch? And that was, it's kind of the feeling from Twitter, from the fans. And then you look at the stat sheet, 13 snaps the entire game.
Right, but I think
snaps and seven touches.
Right. Well, and that's what I was going to say. It was the first time we've seen him on the field when he's not getting the football. And so that was kind of the whole thing, is that every time he's on the field, you're like, oh, I was going to Chase Edmonds. So even when, you know, and I know it's not a clean 50%, but even when it's, you know, 50% of the time that he's on the field, he's not getting the ball. It makes it feel like his reps are increasing.
Right. Well, and he was so impactful, because if you want to look at efficiency of 13 plays, seven times he touched the ball, five of them, there were two touchdowns and three first downs. And so what you're talking about is impactful play. And it was the most, I believe like it was six plays that both he and David Johnson were on the field at the same time. Baby steps, but when we're going from one or two to six, and one of,
right, that was half a season.
Yes. And guess what? So now we've seen it twice this year. Twice when they've been on the field at the same time, what's happened? Touchdowns.
Right, because teams now, and it's what you and I have talked about, and Jess and I are not trying to say that we know more than NFL coaches, but I do think that there is a common sense thing that gets overlooked at times by coaches, and that they try to be too smart. And it's something that we've seen throughout the years with a variety of people. And, you know, I think that creeps in with the Cardinals every once in a while. I was like, oh, well, you know, if we put these guys on the field, then things will become obvious. Like, no, that's the whole point, is that you have two guys that you want to get the ball to, that you can do things with. Like, let's get them both on the field and then force a team to make an adjustment. And then when they make the adjustment, go to the opposite side of it. And that was just something that hasn't happened this season at all. And now it, like you said, it's still not much, but it's definitely way more.
And we're going to talk more about this, but my my number two takeaway is the positive play of an impactful play of players stepping in. Zane Gonzalez hitting two field goals and a game winner. Did you know? I just saw this right now. I did not realize this. I was reading on the game release. That was the first NFL game in which Zane Gonzalez's team won. The first one ever. Yeah.
Well, it's because he blew it twice.
but nonetheless, that was his first NFL win ever. That's amazing. But you look across the board. Will Holden comes in. He plays solid. Like, this is a little bit different. This is a little bit different than going against Oakland when they have no pass rush. Kyler Fackrell leads the team in sacks with 8. And that's the side that Will Holden did. You saw Colby Gossett come in and replace Mike Iupati ably. Perhaps the player I was most impressed with was Gerald Hodges, a guy who's been buried on the depth chart. He's got a little bit of play. But Josh Bynes, who had been the one decent player at linebacker. When Gerald Hodges played earlier in the year, he didn't look good, but he was playing not the middle linebacker, but the Hassan Reddick or the Devin Buchanan spots. He comes in at middle linebacker, and it is their best defense. Like, you might say it was their best defensive performance, and he was the one lining guys up. Now, does that mean start him over Josh Bynes? I don't think so, but I was very impressed with that. Him, so David Amerson, he did fine. So all these guys that they had stepping in positions that replacing other starters, you had Gossett come in at left guard, you had Hodges instead of Bynes, you have Amerson instead of Ben Wickery, and now you've got Zane Gonzalez in place of Phil Dawson. Every single one of those guys stepped up and played starter quality snaps. They did not look like replacement players. They looked like able starters.
Yeah, and that was different, something we haven't seen. You know, one of the things that the Cardinals have done well under Bruce Arians was that whole, you know, next man up mentality, but a lot of times the next man up was a veteran that was just needing like a chance. And I think it was bigger to see young guys that needed an opportunity that they haven't got it yet. And so to see these guys come in and play well and then, you know, make a difference, it was cool to see, man. Like, it was fun.
And what we're saw, because I think this a lot of the problems against, I'll say it, most of the problems defensively, I think, that happened against the Chargers was the fact that you had such a drop off from Buda Baker to Leonard Johnson in that position. You put Buda back out there,
100%.
So you look at the guys that stepped in, at least defensively. There's not a talent disparity really between B'nai Benwicker and David Amerson. You probably could argue that Amerson is the more talented player. Josh Bynes and Gerald Hodges, yeah, there's no real significant drop off there. Then you go Phil Dawson to Zane Gonzalez. Now Dawson, 21 years in the league, so there's no doubting his talent, but there was no real drop off to Zane Gonzalez. And so where they were having players step in, there wasn't a drastic drop in ability. Now, part of that is simply because the starting players there were not great players. But when you don't have such a great difference in play, and that's what we saw against the Chargers, is that Buda Baker being out, going down to Leonard Johnson, that was a problem. That was a big problem. And it caused a lot of mismatches. And these guys came in, and it was fine, which was important to see. Now, concerns. What would you go with your first major concern still in that win?
I think for me, I've talked about this a lot, but my biggest concern is still those linebackers. And I think the first one, you know, obviously Hassan Reddick, he didn't have a good game. The touchdown, he was run over on. He's just, you know, one of the most important things about playing linebacker is just having instincts. And And you can just see that it's clearly new to him, foreign to him, but you do wonder if, like, those instincts are ever going to come, because it's instincts are learned, obviously, but there's also a lot of innate instinctual stuff that linebackers need to do. And he just, I mean, he hasn't gotten it yet, and it's unfortunate. And, you know, it's not like you give up on him yet. I mean, he's only his second year, but you do wonder if and where he can be effective on this defense.
Right. For me, one of the concerns, it was actually one of your positives, is the protection for Josh Rosen, which leads to the greater concern for me. Okay, we'll go with this, is the passing game. They got a great rushing performance, 182 yards. They did great defensively overall. I mean, if you look at it, they held the Packers under 100 yards rushing. Aaron Rodgers, they didn't shut him down, but, you know, Larry Fitzgerald joked on Thursday to said he'd hope that Aaron Rodgers would just chill, and they got a cool Aaron Rodgers performance. It was very average, you know, his passer rating. He didn't turn the ball over. It was a passer rating of just under 80, which means it wasn't a good game. 31 of 50, only 233 yards. But my concern continues to be that the Cardinals passing game is so bad. When the quarterback of the future, the guy that everyone believed was the most ready to handle the NFL game, has one 200-yard passing game. In this game, he was 11 of 26 for 149. He didn't turn the ball over, which has kind of been one of the issues that gets him into trouble. But and as I look at that, you see one of two things. They're not doing a lot in the passing game, and he's still not making decisions quickly enough. And this will go more on the positive side. He's not getting hit, but he's not playing from clean pockets. So he's under pressure a lot. And that's the concern, is while the offensive line was okay, they weren't good. And I kind of look back to, let's go back to 2012. Remember when Kevin Cobb about died? Those first four wins, the offensive line numbers weren't bad, but the numbers lied. Because Cobb was getting away with things that he later did not do. And then came the 9-sack game, and then came the busted ribs and lights out. That's what I'm worried about with Josh Rosen. I think that's one of the things that I've observed, is when we entered this season, one of the reasons why Steve Wilks was talking, run the football, stop the run, run the football, stop the run, and why the passing game looks so odd is the fact that they knew going into this year that they had to protect the quarterback. It wasn't because it was Josh Rosen. It was because it was Sam Bradford. And then when they draft Josh Rosen, now he has to play. Okay, let's not get him killed. And so now and Byron Leftwich would just say, okay, this is the thing. We are trying to protect Josh. And so the passing concepts won't look good. And when they have to throw the ball a lot, if they're down three touchdowns, they're not just going to spread it out four and five wide. They're still going to run things with the tight end, keeping an extra blockers in. And that's simply, hey, no matter what happens this year, we're not going to get him killed. However, it does make for a really atrocious passing game.
Well, and it makes for ugly offense. But I think, again, you're seeing more of what Ray Brown can do when you talk about, you know, these, you kind of hit on it. Like, the pass protection wasn't great, but this is – it was an improvement over what we've seen for a number of games this season. And that, to me, is what the issue – you know, therein lies the rub. And what you saw was, like I said, a better job this week. And so I think that's just kind of – I'm looking for small positives. And
I was going to say my other concern is overall is – it's just the continuing issue. Like how can this team continue to have such misfortune with injuries? And we know that the team was constructed with guys that get hurt, but to have 13 play, have had three more players. Now this is the time of year where guys go in injured reserve, make kind of skews those numbers because they're going on injured reserve because there's only four games left. So if they're going to be out four games, they wouldn't be going to IR earlier in the year. They're just burning a roster spot so someone else can get in there. But nonetheless, the Cardinals can't catch a break when it comes to injuries. And then I joke, of course, unless it's a break.
Right.
And that's and broken that's, foot, broken arm, broken wrist.
You know,
those,
and
they
and,
get all those breaks.
Right. And I was wondering about that because I saw the whole, like, I always worry about when they do these like funky cleat things, if that has something to do with it. Like, I'm not saying that it was the reason why, but like, it was crazy that Kirk kind of broke his foot on something that nobody really saw. Right. And so you're always wondering, oh man, was it because of those stinking cleats that he had specially made and something went wrong with them? So,
well, the thing with that, I thought they were custom cleats. They're not. Well, at least what Larry Fitzgerald, they take their actual regular game cleats and give right, them to an artist to paint over.
But the thing is like the thing I worry about is that I wonder if they're not broken in all the time because they are trying to make them look clean before the game starts. I don't know how many cleats they get that are like done up like that. That's my other question. Because usually you have a practice pair and like a game pair, and I know players have multiples because they get them for free anyways. But you know, it's just it's interesting. And the thing is, like the offensive line, we're not really surprised about, right? Like we kind of knew this coming in. It's the other things. It's Buda Baker, and I know he wasn't gone this week, but he didn't look like himself either. You know, it's Buda Baker missing two games. It is DJ Humphrey missing his third game of the season. And, you know, that joke I made last week that, you know, Mason Cole is only a full season behind him. Well, now he's 15 games behind him. Like, that's an insane thing to me that Mason Cole is less than a full season of played games behind DJ Humphries, despite being drafted four seasons later. So, it's just one of those situations where you don't know what's going to happen. And you begin to wonder, and obviously you and I would have to really like go back and study this, but you begin to wonder if it's a health and fitness thing. I know this, they have a different guy than from even the Arians era, right?
It's still Buddy Morris, right?
Oh, no, it's still Buddy. So yeah. So that's what you wonder is if it's, is it a Buddy Morris thing?
Well, they had issues with John Lott. Everyone talked about that too. So football sucks. I think that comes down to it is that the Cardinals are just unlucky.
Well, I was going to say that's the other thing. It's like, when you are a bad team, things like injuries tend to hurt more because you don't have replacement for those guys, right? And so then it seems to feel like those guys or it's happening to more guys or more impactful guys, and when the reality is that you just had less talented guys, like not less talented as in lesser talents, but like you just had a lesser quantity of talented guys, and they've all seemed to get nicked up. I mean, for me, the first one that I'm like, oh, this really sucks, is obviously Christian Kirk.
Yeah,
because it's more, at least to me, it's more about next season. And now there's four games, and obviously Rosen, basically was 2.5 short. So now you're talking, and we'll just call it 7 for easy math, but like we're basically 7 games where those guys didn't get to work together. And that sucks.
Well, and foot injuries, they say there's not going to be any setbacks next year. That's the thing that worries me is,
well, anytime, right. Anytime it's lower body, you're always worried. like, unless it's a quarterback and a shoulder type thing, like, unless it, lower body injuries always worry you because they are the key to 95% of the success of NFL players. I mean, fast people need to be able to run fast. Strong people need to have good leverage. You know, quick, you know, cutting people, like, look at Tyrann Mathieu. Like, one of the biggest things that he lost was that explosiveness, that ability to move and laterally at an elite speed. And so, you know, it's just one of those, it's one of those crappy situations that we've unfortunately become accustomed to, but in a season where you're already bad, it sucks more because it's not like, I mean, it's not like you're losing a guy that's going to be the difference between making the playoffs and not. You're losing a guy that's going to lose valuable reps and playing time with fellow rookies and young players as you're trying to develop a culture of winning and kind of reprogram their brains. Because this is the other thing, and, you know, like, I don't ever blame players for losses, but the reality is that, like, Josh Rosen, I believe, only had one, and I you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe he only had one winning season, and while he was at UCLA, and that was his freshman season. And then, like, Christian Kirk did not win a ton of games while he was at Texas A&M. In fact, most people would say, and not because of Kirk, but most people would say Christian Kirk underachieved, or the team underachieved while he was there. And so when you look at those things, it's just one of those, like, you need to learn to win. And that is a tough thing to do. Yeah. Rosen literally only had one winning season. He was 8-5 his freshman year. So, you know, it winning is something that you have to learn how to do correctly. And the rookies need it just as much as, like, those veterans need it back. And so you hate to lose out on these opportunities. And, you know, you and I and fans will write things like meaningless wins and stuff, but these mean things to these players and to this to the psyche of the team.
And with that, let's move on to the next segment of the Rise to See Red podcast. We'll come back and we're going to talk about our reactions to the play of the rookies. Unfortunately, Kirk's done for the year, but there's lots to talk about because there are a whole bunch of rookies playing. That's coming up next on Rise Up See Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And let's talk rookies. So Christian Kirk's done for the year, but oh my heavens, they had a lot of rookies playing. Let's kind of go through this list. Playing in the offensive line. So one, you've got rookie quarterback Josh Rosen. You had rookie receiver Christian Kirk starting. Mason Cole, a rookie, at center. They started Corey Cunningham at left tackle. Colby Gossett, a rookie, came in. Will Holden's a second-year player. And then you add Chase Edmonds and Trent Sherfield to the mix on offense. Defensively, rookie Zeke Turner got only one snap, but he continues to be a force on special teams as he leads the NFL in special teams tackles. Doing a fantastic job. And so let's kind of look at the rookies' play. We've talked a little bit about this. Chase Edmonds, let's start with him, was great. And we've said, I think it was probably just on the last show, Edmonds just needs a little, like, he's not the type of player that can make his own stuff because he's a slippery player. He's not overly physical. He's fast, but he's not the fastest. So he doesn't have the high end elite anything other than short area quickness. And to be able to take advantage of that short area quickness, you've got to give him a little bit of space. And the offensive line was able to get him just a little bit of space. And then his hunger kicks in. Obviously he had some help on the near touchdown run, which was overturned, but he got just enough room and he showed what he can do.
Yeah, and that was the nice thing that you saw for once is that, again, these guys getting an opportunity to make plays. I think it's interesting the lack of touches you've seen from Edmonds and Christian Kirk on an offense devoid of talent. I mean, there literally is only two guys worth giving the ball to outside of the rookies to find out what they have, and that's Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson. Like, Ricky Seals-Jones hasn't been good this year. Jermaine Gresham hasn't been good. Like, so why is it taking so long? And then why are they not consistent touches? You know, like, Edmonds should be getting about 10 touches a game. There's enough touches in the game. Well, maybe not Arizona Cardinals offense, but there's enough touches in the game to get him 10 touches. There's enough touches in the game to get Christian Kirk 5. Like, it doesn't have to be 5 straight passes either. I mean, it can be a behind the line of scrimmage pass. It could be that jet sweep he ran for a first down. Like, that's just, again, that's just stuff that you would expect to see more of, because these are guys that you want to see play more. And now, like we said, unfortunately Kirk's done, but now you're getting to see Edmonds blossom a little bit. And you wonder if you're trying to draw a silver lining from a really bad situation, and that's obviously the Kirk injury, does this mean that we'll see more of Edmonds on the field? Like, will Edmonds be the guy maybe running jet sweeps, or will David Johnson be split out more? Like, how will this affect everything?
Obviously, yes. Now, let's look at the play of Rosen. Rosen continues to give us rookie looks, but how about that big-time throw to Fitz on third down and 23? They probably lose that game if that play doesn't happen. It was part Rosen for getting away from the rush, part Rosen for making that type of throw down the field. And then, of course, I mean, Larry Fitzgerald doing his thing. That was something special. But, you know, Rosen, and this is coming right after just the stupidest thing you could do. And he's about to run out of bounds, and it looks like he's thrown away, only throws it into the field of play. It should have been picked off. Luckily, it was Eddie Pleasant, and, you know, that's why he was unsigned. The Cardinals didn't even want him after he was in town for a couple of weeks. Eddie Pleasant signed off the streets. You know, he dropped the interception. If that third down doesn't happen, if that throw doesn't happen, they're giving the ball back to the Packers in a tie game with, what, 4 minutes left and at midfield. That's a game the Cardinals lose.
Yeah, and that would be – I mean, that would just be – oh, my gosh. That would have been a devastating turn of events, wouldn't it? And like you said, it didn't happen, so, I mean, we can what if it all we want. But the reality is that the Cardinals have a talented quarterback that, again, they've kind of castrated in to try to break him of – Or potentially not get him broken, and so that's frustrating to see. And so I wanted to point it out because we gave them grief earlier in the season against the Bears and the Seahawks, where they just kind of ran the football, tried to run the clock, and then set up for a game winning field goal. In this game, they tried to throw a pass to Larry Fitzgerald, and it was jumped by. I believe it was Jair Alexander, but it might have been somebody else. But and it was one of those situations where it's like, okay, I appreciate the aggressiveness, and people are going to say, well, isn't that what you want them to do? Yeah, but again, Jess and I talked about this after the Seattle game. It should be a rollout to the right side, his throwing side, where he has an option where if a receiver is covered, he just slides down and runs the clock. And I understand it was 44, and so you're trying to make sure that you don't lose any yardage, yada, yada, yada. It's a quick throw. But put him in a situation where if somebody bails on the receiver and they're open, he can flick the wrist, get the first down. It was 3 yards. If he's not open, he can slide at the line of scrimmage or, you know, a yard behind and not take a big loss. But it's just it comes back to you're asking Josh Rosen to make way harder throws than you need to consistently. And it was something I brought up last week with his, you know, highest level of difficult throws in the NFL. And for him, that throw is one of those throws that everybody knows they need 3 yards. So they're not going to expect Fitz to run anything deeper than, let's say, 5. And so as soon as Fitz sells the up route and starts to make his outbreak, like, Alexander just jumped the route. He was like, I'm trying to take this to the house because our offense can't do anything today. And so he gambled. And again, people are going to say, well, Rosen needs to, you know, throw a better ball, this, that, or the other. Well, one, he's got one receiver because Christian Kirk was already hurt. And then two, it was a terrible play design. And so, I mean, at least rub Fitzgerald off an outside receiver, like have him stacked. So the defensive backs have to take two guys that are going in opposite directions. Like, there's a number of things they could have done, and they decided to do the most mundane, simplistic throw, and it just didn't work out. And that's the frustrating thing.
Right. Now, Trent Sherfield had a nice catch. Corey Cunningham played ably, had the two holding penalties and a false start. Not ideal, but they were still pleased as a play. I think for me, of the rookies on the line out, now Steve Keim came out and said, and maybe this is not a good thing, but Mason Cole, like AQ Shipley in previous years, has graded out as their most consistent offensive lineman week in and week out. But I was impressed by Colby Gossett, who came in and wasn't overwhelmed by the situation coming in the second half.
Yeah, and he played well, well-ish, I guess is the right term. You know, it's one of those situations where it almost seems like the more simplistic the Cardinals are making things, the more success they're having all of a sudden. You know, you've got a guy – now, I know he's been with the team for a while now, what, 3 weeks, 4 weeks off the Vikings practice squad, but it's – he did a nice job – when he was thrust into a situation to play, and I really truly believe it's just one of those things where they're probably making assignments and calls and things like that much simpler than they normally are to help these guys. And we're seeing an effectiveness that we hadn't seen from, you know, a bunch of high priced veterans. So Gossett, Cunningham, Cole, all good things. You know, and I know he's not a rookie, but you even, like you talked about earlier, you lump Will Holden in there because it was, again, like we've seen this year, you need backups. And so if he's showing he can do that in a pinch start, or, you know, for him, if he gets a five game stretch, because who knows what's going on with DJ Humphreys, where he's asked to play right tackle and can do it successfully. Like, he's a guy that you pay at the end of the season, because all of a sudden now you have Wetzel and Holden, and that makes your depth along your offensive line infinitely better right away.
Absolutely. And so obviously Edmonds played well. Trent Sherfield's going to get a bigger chance now. Chad Williams
and
he's starting to.
Sherfield's starting to catch things.
Yeah.
Which is, I know that sounds really stupid. You're like, he's a receiver. So he's supposed to do, like, well, clearly you haven't watched the Cardinals receivers this year.
Or last year. Or last year. Remember as bad as the receiving core was last year. And we talked about, oh, I'm so done with John Brown and Jerron Brown. Wouldn't most fans take either one of those players over pretty much any of the other players that they have now?
Oh, absolutely. That was actually a conversation on the Revenge of the Birds message board today. It's like, how much do you think they wish they would have paid for Jerron Brown? Just to have, like, a veteran consistency that they don't have. You know, I thought the John Brown situation just kind of had to be done, unfortunately, because of his health issues. And sometimes you just need to change of scenery. But, yeah, I mean – how much better would it be to have Jerron Brown as your number two this season, or now your de facto number two with Kirk out, than, yeah, Trent Sherfield and Jalen Tolliver. And you know, like, and hopefully Chad Williams, like you said, but he's got to, again, much like DJ Humphreys, they've got to get on the field before I'm actually going to believe it.
And let's move on to the final part of the Rise of Sea Red podcast. We'll come back and we're going to talk about injuries and what to expect moving forward. That's coming up next. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast. Let's wrap this show up with talking about some of the injuries. What can we look at? So injury issues, we've got more. We lost Mike Iupati. You lost Christian Kirk. You lost Olsen Pierre. DJ Humphrey's injury continues to be a mystery. Buda Baker's knee is obviously not 100%. They've now got five offensive linemen on injured reserve. Is there any silver lining coming out of this? Because it's getting old.
Well, I think the silver lining you try to find is opportunity. Like we said, Corey Cunningham has kind of emerged to maybe he's a guy that is a starter. Obviously, we haven't seen him play on the right side. And even though he's played well, I have a very hard time seeing the Cardinals pull the trigger and having him start at left tackle over DJ Humphreys. So, but he's playing well. And that matters. You know, for young guys like Tolliver and Sherfield and even Williams, Kirk's injury just means an opportunity to step up. And the biggest thing that we've talked about this year that the Cardinals need to address is that they need to find a wide receiver that can, you know, maybe obviously not replace Fitz, but replace production-wise some of what Fitz does. And so all of a sudden, if Sherfield or Tolliver or Williams steps up, wow, well, okay, then maybe it's not a round two priority or round three priority, but it can be, you know, a day three priority, because if Fitz comes back, obviously, but, you know, because you assume that Christian Kirk will continue to grow. And oh, by the way, now, you know, Trent Sherfield has established himself as a reliable third receiver in the NFL. And so now you're looking for more of a 3-4 guy. Then, you know, obviously if a number one presents himself, you grab him, but it's not a desperation to find a number one or two situation. Obviously if Fitz retires, everything changes, but if Fitz comes back and then Kirk is healthy and then one of these guys emerges as your three, because you have to have three wide receivers in today's NFL. I mean, you just have to, or you're not going to be a good team. That's, you know, again, these are trying to find silver linings. I think that's what you kind of have to do at this point is say, hey, let's just say this is a good thing.
Well, and if this is going to be the case, well, then let's put Chase Edmonds and David Johnson on the field at the same time.
I'm with you 100% on that.
I mean, they should have been doing that already because really they've only had two receivers that have been worth their weight on the field thus far. Now, on the offensive line, I'm maybe this is just flushing out the end of, so Andre Smith's gone. Mike Iupati's done. He won't be back next year. And so Justin Pugh obviously will be back. But now you've got you've got two players you can look at. Odiobushi, he's been solid, believe it or not, even though Jay wanted to replace him with Jeremy Vunovich. Then you add Colby Gossett. You get, over the last few games, you get some game speed reps to see if they can do it. You know, we talked about that in one of the last shows. Like, that way you don't have to go out and pay someone like Justin Bethel before you've seen it in a game.
Well, it's like I talked about. Like, so say Cunningham plays well and continues to play well, and now you go into the offseason and you have the opportunity to draft a Jonah Williams. And this is, you know, these are names that some people know, some won't, but, you know, you have a chance to draft a Jonah Williams in the top seven, or, you know, or you go out and you can sign Daryl Williams, who played in Carolina, you know, familiar with Wilkes and Ray Brown. And so now you're saying, well, maybe we don't have to waste is a very strong word, but, you know, utilize a draft pick at seven to get a guy that's going to compete at right tackle with Corey Cunningham. We can worry about that on day two. We don't have to go spend $14 million or $12 million on Darrell Williams. We can, you know, because we have Corey Cunningham, you know, those are important things. And then, like we said earlier, like the Holden Wetzel, Ibushi Gossett type thing. Like, I mean, we obviously know Wetzel and well, I guess we shouldn't say we know, but Wetzel and Shipley are likely to be back next year on the roster. So that's two guys. If Cunningham doesn't play well, does he come back? We'll say yes. So that's three guys. And they kept 10 this year. They'll probably keep 9 or 10 next year. So, you know, again, you're creating depth where you didn't have it before, and now you're finding it, or, you know, or you're finding guys, and now you need to go find more depth. So, I mean, again, you got to spin it to a positive, like we've done for most of the year with the Cardinals. And I think they're all fair questions, because there are, you know, fair answers, because again, sometimes you're just searching for good things to talk about.
Well, right. So if you're looking at this past offseason, they spent a ton of money on Justin Pugh, and they spent some money on Andre Smith. But how much better do you feel if it were this offseason? And sure, okay, you spend big money on Pugh, whatever, but sure, you give the same contract to Andre Smith, but he comes in as a backup to Corey Cunningham. You don't feel bad about that contract at all.
No, and in fact, you probably get it for half. You probably get like 2 years, $4 million instead of 4 years, or 2 years, $8 million type thing. And I know it was an $8 million guaranteed, but still, you know, that's what you look at. And exactly, like, now all of a sudden it's like, oh, we're bringing in a veteran in case the rookie or the second year guy isn't able to carry over. Yeah. Or gets injured like everybody else that we sign or draft. So, you know, it's one of those situations, like you said, obviously you're not going to sign a $9.5 million a year guy, but the fact that you don't have to is also a key thing. Cause now all of a sudden you're saying, okay, like, remember you always, despite the fake $70 million that or $90 million that we keep hearing, they're not going to have that much. It's never going to happen because they only have like 25 guys under contract. So they're going to have to sign a bunch of guys anyways. So with that, you have to bring in guys that, or you'll have to be able to lower your needs, and guys like, you know, Gossett and Cunningham and Ibushi, those guys can be guys that are on the roster next year, and you're not saying, oh God, we got to start this guy. It's like, oh wow, this is one of our backups. That's a key, you know, he's a guy that played really well for us. Or, you know, hey, this guy played really well, and now we don't have to go sign, you know, Andrew Norwell for $15 million a year.
And you look at as well, now moving with expectations forward, for me, it was, okay, they lose this game. It's kind of they're probably losing. They might win another game and get to three wins. Now they've gotten the three wins, and the way they did it, you look at the next 2 weeks and you go, wait a minute. If the Cardinals can play like that on the road in Lambeau against a team, let's be honest, the Packers are not a good team this year. So, but that being said, the next 2 weeks, they're playing teams who are not good. Detroit is 4-8. They've lost 4 out of the last 5. They're 1-4 on the road. That is a game that, let's be honest, even at the current state of things, the Cardinals should win. But then right after that, their next game on the road is against an Atlanta team that is, who, it doesn't make any sense why they are, but they are 4-8. They've lost 4 of their last 5. Now, they do play much better at home than on the road, but you look at what the Cardinals did last week and you think, okay, do they build on that? And so it erases the memory of the Oakland and Chargers game. And now you look forward. Okay, we've seen this against the Packers. You look at it. This team might not say they're gonna. I'm not predicting that that's gonna happen. But you get the feeling that whoa, they could win the next two games, and it wouldn't be that big a surprise. It wouldn't be a shock like it was against Green Bay. It would be a okay. But then look at that. You go from a terrible, like a abysmal 2 or 3 win team. You get to 5 wins in a season, and that's your everyday run of the mill bad year. The Cardinals have had 80,000 5-11 seasons, I think. And even good teams, except for the Patriots, go through a 5-11 year. What you don't get are teams on the regular that go 2-14 or 3-13. And the message thread that we had going on Twitter with Blake Murphy, one of your guys and the host of the Reds of the Birds podcast, you know, he did a little bit of research about top 5 picks. If the Cardinals can get out of that top 5, and I know people will want to see them in the top 5 for draft purposes, but if they get out of that top 5, that probably exponentially, it will basically takes away the surety that Kime and Wilkes are going to get fired this year or next year. Because basically every team that's been a top 5 pick either gets fired this year or next year.
Well, and you know, just to clarify, it's top 5, like where you ended up after the season, not trade up guys and stuff like that. But yeah, and that's the thing is when you do that, when you have a team like that that is trending upwards, it's important. And that's the thing is it looks like the Lions have tuned out Matt Patricia. I think that's the most polite way I can say that. For the Falcons, it's a lot of it is just injuries. I mean, yeah, they have their big offensive names, but their defense is just in tatters. I think they're averaging over 30 points a game, and they've only won, what, 4? So, yes. So, you know, that's just one, like Jess said, it's just one of those, like, fluky seasons. Oh, their points per game is down now, but their points against is worse than the Cardinals. They give up 28 points per game. So like, that's actually really, really bad. For those of you that don't know. So when you look at it from that, you know, standpoint, it starts to get to the point. It's almost like the opposite of what you see with good defensive teams, that they start to give up on the offense and then all of a sudden, you know, the points against inflates. Now it's like the opposite for the Falcons. Their offense is quitting because they know no matter what they do, the defense is just going to give it back up. So, you know, if we keep this game at 21, then we're only going to give up 24 and lose. So I think the biggest thing, though, with these next two games is it's going to show, fair or not, what kind of teachers and coaches the Arizona Cardinals have on their team. Because like we said, the injuries are going to weigh heavily on the next, you know, 4 games, but especially the next 2 games, which are winnable. And we didn't necessarily think that last week. I mean, the Cardinals are only 1.5-point home dogs. That's honestly, they're probably, what would you say, 5-6 if they lose to Green Bay?
Yeah, likely.
So, I mean, Vegas is even like, you know, we don't know, because the Cardinals seem to be trending in the right direction, but every time they start to trend a little bit better, like they take a weird step back. And now this week, obviously, sans another blowout, that step back may be expected because, again, you're talking about 3 more starters going out injured.
And with that, let's wrap this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast up. Pretty good notes. Cardinals win. There are some injuries, but they've got 2 winnable games. I know that's going to disappoint people who are more about the draft, but let's be honest. Winning is important no matter what. And you can't tell the players not to win, and you can't tell the coaches not to try to win because their jobs are on the line. So this is fantastic. The Cardinals get a win. Maybe they get another win this week. We wrap this show up. This is episode 213. We'll be back next week talking about what should be a competitive game. And with that, that's Seth Cox from RevengeTheBirds.com. I'm Jess Root from CardsWire.com. We'll be back again next week. Thanks for listening. Go Cardinals.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.